I must tell you that the sweetest sound to a 70-year-old man who's about 80 pounds overweight is to hear himself described as a fresh voice. I have two brief apologies to make to you before I begin. About a week ago, I backed into a tree and knocked my lower teeth loose. So if you have some difficulty with my accent placing it, it's bad driving. That's the accent. And the second apology is that I'm going to work from a script, and I do that for your own protection, because if I begin to ad-lib, who knows, we'll have to lock the doors, you'll never get out of here. I'm reading from the latest work that I've been doing, researching the history and background of forced schooling or compulsory schooling, which is really an identity between Canada and the United States. They're quite similar, even though there are local differences, and the architects of Canadian schooling, the architects of U.S. schooling, were in fact closely allied with one another. The man from whom I first got wind of the real purpose of American schooling was James Bryant Conant, a Mayflower descendant and one of the influential Americans of the 20th century. I'll get to what those purposes are in a little while, but first we have to do some groundwork together, beginning with the matter of boredom. When I was a boy, my granddad told me that bored people are childish people, so not to ever say aloud that I was bored. He said that the obligation to enlighten myself and amuse myself could never be passed off as anybody else's responsibility but my own. And in the area where I grew up, in western Pennsylvania, around Pittsburgh, I can honestly say, no matter how radical it sounds, that not once did I ever hear a companion or an enemy utter the expression, "I'm bored." I didn't hear that said, although I knew the dictionary definition, till I got to New York City, where everybody said, "I'm bored," all the time, every day. I couldn't escape the expression. On that basis, that we're responsible for our own amusement and enlightenment, American secondary schools, North American secondary schools, can fairly be called childish places because they are places of exquisite boredom. Think of school as we have evolved it in the past 100 years as a laboratory of extended childishness. Then think of the possibility that this might have been done for some rational purpose, as significant as the boredom of young people in schools is. The fact is that teachers in these institutions are bored too. They might not so readily admit it, but boredom is the common condition of school teachers, their low energy, their dispirited speech, and often their whining is the giveaway. If you ask school kids, as I often did, why they feel bored, they always give the same few answers. They say that the work is stupid, that it makes no sense, or that they already know it. They say they want to be doing something real, not just sitting around. The teachers themselves don't seem to know much, and in any case, clearly aren't interested in what they teach. And when you ask teachers why they are bored, they say it's the kids' fault. They say that kids are rude, that they aren't interested in anything except grades. So how can a teacher be interested in them? It's a catch-22, you see. When you look at schools closely, you gradually become aware what childish places they are, how many kids and even teachers are held prisoners there and a childhood they would willingly have left long ago if they knew how, and if the institution had enabled them to escape. Before I continue, let me define my subject here a bit further. Think of a continuum from childlike, that's what we expect young children to be, innocent, trusting, respectful, obedient, anxious to please, and then go all the way across to childish. The palette of childish characteristics includes selfishness, irresponsibility, boredom, envy, inconsiderate behavior, whining, and in general, a lack of emotional proportion and self-discipline. Childish people need to be attended by adults. That's important, so don't forget it because it'll come in handy in a few minutes. It's an important clue to what's really going on. Now, contrast that childlike to childish continuum with another familiar word, youthful, which offers quite a positive window on human character. Youthful means adventurous, energetic, curious, resilient, indomitable, surprising, open to new experience. Very few schools I've ever seen could possibly contain, let alone encourage, youthfulness. I hope you recognize the paradox in that. An institutional structure which finds itself compelled to suppress those very qualities which are universally acknowledged to be passports of success in Western society. Obviously, we're in the presence of some greater interest or interests which need protection against full self-development on the part of too many to explain rationally why we have the schools we do. Put simply, they can't be the way they are unless it serves some purpose or purposes. They are not expensive accidents. Remember, rationality and reasonableness are two different things. Surely it isn't hard to make the case that our schools are unreasonable by discouraging the ingredients of youthfulness, but that's a far cry from saying they're irrational. You'll see what I mean a little more clearly as we proceed.